You're listening to the Quince Podcast.
'84 to 1990. The metamorphosis of Kashmir happened over a period of time. And having lived in Srinagar for all those years, I have seen some of the history unfold in front of my eyes. My name is Ahmed Ali Fayaz and I'm a journalist based in Srinagar. You are listening to a special episode of News and Views podcast, where I have been invited by the Quint to talk about some crucial turning points in Kashmir's political history, some of which, as I said, I experienced firsthand. I am recording this podcast in Srinagar on my phone, so pardon if the audio quality is not up to the mark. For Kashmir, the events of 1990 were a turning point in its post-1947 political and cultural history. The socio-political landscape was left completely changed thereafter. On 19th of January 1990, several mosques in Srinagar played the Azadi slogans, asking the Indian security forces to quit. A Jabiro, a Zalimo, Kashmir Hamara Chhod Do. They didn't, but failed to come to anybody's rescue. The unprecedented fear triggered the exodus of the minority Kashmiri Pandits, who had already started moving out in smaller numbers. They call it Holocaust Day. On January 20th, the following day, CRPF machine guns left over 50 Kashmiri Muslim demonstrators dead and scores injured in a peaceful procession at Gaukadal. Kashmiri Muslims remember 21st of January as the beginning of the quote-unquote genocide. They call it the beginning of the genocide, the first massacre. Yes, these were all turning points. But as I said, the metamorphosis didn't happen overnight. It happened over a period of time. Jammu and Kashmir had its first taste of true democracy 30 years after India achieved independence, year 1977. The Congress Party at the centre had rigged all elections until then, when Governor L.K. Jha presided over the first free and fair Lok Sabha and Assembly elections, both swept in the Kashmir Valley by Sheikh Mohammed Abdullah's National Conference. Sheikh died in September 1982. And his son Farooq Abdullah got a landslide victory in the assembly elections of 1983. But the first setback to the Kashmir's growing faith in democracy occurred in July 1984 when Prime Minister Indira Gandhi, at the behest of her local party colleagues, engineered Farooq Abdullah's dismissal with the defection of 12 MLAs of the National Conference. Sheikh's son-in-law Ghulam Muhammad Shah, commonly known as Gul Shah, claimed to be the leader of the Real National Conference. He appointed his wife and Farooq Abdullah's sister Khalida as the president of the party and named it National Conference Khalida. It was subsequently rechristened as Awami National Conference. Gul Shah himself was installed as chief minister with the support of the Congress. But the Congress National Conference Khalida coalition didn't last long. Marred by months of turbulence and curfew, Gulshah's government was terminated by Rajiv Gandhi in 1986, over a year after Mrs. Gandhi was assassinated by her security guards in October 1984. But in the meantime, Gulshah had stirred a controversy with the erection of a mosque on the premises of the civil secretariat in Jammu. Elsewhere in Uttar Pradesh, something was brewing that came handy for a limited ripple effect right up to Kashmir. The verdict on permission for puja at the Babri Masjid was used to trigger attacks on some temples and Pandit neighborhoods in Mufti's stronghold of Anantnag. For several days, Shah and Mufti kept their eyes shut to the attacks. The year was 1986. In fact, later, Mufti's own colleagues alleged that the attacks for the first time in Kashmir after 1947 had been engineered by him. Hindu Action Committee leader Balkishan Handu said all these incidents were aimed at edging on the mass exodus of the Hindus. He said, quote unquote, "The large-scale arson, pillage, plunder and desecration of our temples was aimed at creating conditions for the mass exodus of the Hindus. If we quit Kashmir, we'll be handing it on a platter to the Muslim groups who want to secede from India. But that is for the central government to consider." Responding to Handu, Farooq Abdullah said that the separatists had actually gained strength in the 20 months of his political hibernation. He was not in power for those 20 months. He told journalists, quote unquote, "Does Rajiv Gandhi want Hindus to run away? Does he want a Punjab in Kashmir?" So Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi withdrew support to Shah's unpopular government, shifted Mufti to Delhi and inducted him as Minister of Tourism. Months later, when Farooq was again reinstated as the Chief Minister with the Congress support, Mirwais Farooq, who was chairman of the Awami Action Committee with substantial influence in downtown Srinagar, became a part of this alliance, and the troika of Farooq Abdullah, Rajiv Gandhi and Mirwais Farooq addressed an effervescent rally at Iqbal Park in Srinagar. But while ostensibly campaigning for the Congress party in the assembly elections of March 1997, Mufti Saeed, at a rally in Anantnag in presence of then Congress party's Jammu and Kashmir in charge Najma Hepatullah, displayed his pen, signalling his supporters to vote for the Jamaat Islami, dominated Muslim United Front or MUF. The pen at the ink part was the election symbol of the Muslim United Front. Even after the separatists began gaining ground with Mufti's test support, I didn't see a single shop shut in Srinagar or elsewhere on the day of the JKLF leader Maqbool Bhatt's execution in February 1984. Or on his death anniversary in 1985 and 86. One odd call for shutdown came from Abdul Ghani Lohan. Muzaffar Hussain Beg was his deputy and one of Maqbool Bhatt's counselors in a murder case. The parliament elections of November 1989 were nothing like the one of December 1984. In contrast to the massive participation in 1984, when National Conference's Abdul Rashid Kabuli defeated Chief Minister Gul Shah's son Muzaffar Shah by a margin of nearly 3 lakh votes in Srinagar, nobody even filed a nomination paper in 1989. National Conference's Mohammad Shafi Bhatt was declared elected uncontested. The turnout was a dismal 3-5% in Anantnag and Baramulla. On 2nd of December 1989, Mufti became the Home Minister in V.P. Singh's government at the centre. Soon he began planning Farooq's exit with the appointment of his favourite Jagmohan as Jammu and Kashmir's governor second time. But the biggest turning point came when the JKLF militants kidnapped Mufti's daughter Rubaya and got 5 top commanders released in exchange for her. As the word spread that JKLF had brought the government of India to its knees and the 5 commanders were being set free in downtown Srinagar, I too walked to the spectacle at Bohri Kadal Chowk. My friend Tariq Bhatt, who is now a freelance producer, narrated to me how the youths of his neighborhood had begun to see Azadi around the corner. On the spot, he told me about things he overheard, like the youths telling an India Today crew that the next time they, means the India Today correspondents, would be here in Srinagar on a visa. But despite the surging crowds, 2 carbine-wielding constables of Jammu and Kashmir police in uniform were smartly in control of the situation at their positions. Pressure was building up on Farooq Abdullah from New Delhi. Before he gave up his sustained resistance, he placed responsibility of the consequences of the militants' release on the centre. The militants' release that evening turned the valley into an unprecedented euphoria and a sense of victory against India. There was jubilation in Srinagar and other towns. Earlier that year, I witnessed youths at a prayer congregation at the Eidgah grounds in Srinagar greeting Double Farooq, means the Farooq Abdullah and Mirwais Farooq, with the hostile slogans. Months thereafter witnessed a series of blasts. First of August 1988, the militants chose the Central Telegraph Office and Srinagar Club as the first targets of their attacks. Earlier on 10th of June, 3 civilians were killed and 20 injured when the police opened fire on protesters demonstrating against the 20% hike on the power tariff. On 18th of August, curfew was clamped when the Pakistani President General Zia-ul-Haq's death in an air crash caused mayhem. Divisional Commissioner Mohammad Shafi Pandit maintained that the curfew was imposed when some miscreants attacked the houses, temples and shops of the Pandits in Anantnag at Baramulla. On 18th of September, JKLF's first militant Ejaz Dar got killed in an attack on the residence of the then Deputy Inspector General Kashmir Police Ali Muhammad Vitali. What followed was a series of blasts and clashes and shut down on 27th of October, the anniversary day of the Indian Army's first landing in Kashmir in 1947. On the other side, there were also massive demonstrations against Salman Rushdie's novel Satanic Verses from the very beginning of the year 1989. The first death in the police firing occurred on 13th of February. And then on 4th April, Detained separatist leader Shabir Shah's father died in police action in Anantnag when 2 civilians got killed and 17 sustained injuries. On 12th of May, 5 tourists were injured in an attack on their bus. 2 people got killed when a mob attacked a police station. On the eve of Eid al-Adha on 13th of July, 3 policemen and a prominent trader's son were killed in the first major encounter in downtown Srinagar at Bohri Kadal area. All these only created more panic. The first of the targeted killings began with the assassination of the National Conference worker Muhammad Yusuf Halwai in Kalashpura Fateh Kadal in downtown Srinagar on 21st of August, and the Bharatiya Janasangh leader Tikalal Taplu near his home in Habak Kadal on 13th of September. Taplu's funeral was attended by senior BJP leaders Kedarnath Sahni and L.K. Advani, but it spread a wave of terror among the pandits. Barely weeks after, a local Pandit woman, Sheila Tikku, was gunned down on the Habak Kadal Bridge on 1st of November 1989. Then it was the retired judge Neelkanth Ganju who had sentenced Maqbool Bhatt to death in a murder case. He was shot dead outside the Jammu and Kashmir High Court in Srinagar on 4th of November. Advocate Premnath Bhatt was gunned down in Anantnag on 27th of December. A number of Muslims too were branded as agents and informants of the security forces, kidnapped and shot dead. Kashmir also lost its cinema halls to this brewing conflict. Days after the release of the JKLF militants, one Air Marshal Noor Khan of Allah Tigers and Asya Andrabi of the Dukhtarani Millat got all the 18 cinema theatres and scores of wine shops all across Kashmir closed with the deadline of 31st of December 1989. In January and February 1990, Pandit M.L. Bhan and Tej Kishan Razdan were among the 4 IB officers shot dead. In fact, such was the terror that on one occasion even the IB sit-off did not attend the relaying ceremony of their colleagues at Gupkar Road, which was thought to be safe. No sooner did Mufti appoint Jagmohan as governor on 18th of January 1990, Farooq Abdullah quit in protest. It consummated the mainstream political vacuum and led to near total systemic breakdown. Slogans for Azadi and Nizam-e-Mustafa created panic among the minority community, even as there were no attacks on the Pandits, their homes or temples on 19th and 20th of January. On January 21st, local Muslim populations defied curfew and gathered for a massive procession in Srinagar. It was peaceful, but the CRPF from its pillboxes at Gau Kadal opened fire, killing over 50 demonstrators. Scores were left injured. Just 4 days later, on 25th of January, JKLF militants shot dead 4 unarmed Indian Air Force personnel at Rawalpura Chowk. On the same day, the Border Security Force killed 26 civilian Muslim demonstrators in what is known to be the second massacre at Handwara in northern Kashmir. Murmurs of protests among the Muslims grew louder with the brutal killings of the Sher-e-Kashmir Institute of Medical Sciences nurse Sarla Bhatt in April 1990, a Pandit lecturer and his wife in Zainagadal, a chemist and his wife at Wakura Gandharbal. But threats from militants kept pouring in. It was finally on 31st of March 1992 that a 5,000 strong demonstration of the local Muslims came out on the streets to protest the brutal killing of Sohanlal Brarukh, his wife Bimla and daughter Archana, who had also been allegedly raped at Nai Sadak in Gaukadal area. However, threats and death warrants silenced the helpless populations. Even after the chain of incidents and selective killings from September 1989 to January 1990, a large number of Pandits chose to stay back. In the middle of March 1990, a full-page advertisement from Hizbul Mujahideen was delivered by a stranger at the offices of the vernacular dailies in Srinagar. Its caption asked, quote-unquote, anti-movement Pandits to immediately leave Kashmir. I was there when the editor of Al-Safa News, Muhammad Shaban Wakil, was reading the statement. He turned pale and told the militant courier that publishing the statement would make the government ban the newspapers and seal the printing presses. Wakil was asked to act as advised in a footnote. It asked editors to publish the statement without any contchant. By the time District Magistrate Ghulam Abbas seized the printing presses and banned the publications next day, most of the Pandits had left in panic. And with the militants and the soldiers wielding guns, the common Kashmiris, Pandits as well as militants, were completely helpless and sandwiched in between. The Al-Safa editor was gunned down at his office in April 1991 after his daily carried a series of editorials against the militant shutdown calls. If you like listening to this podcast, please subscribe to the News and Views playlist for more podcasts. The Quint is live on Apple, JioSaavn, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and most of other popular podcast streaming platforms.